All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We've got the first round of All-Star voting out. I'll read it out at the end of the segment. Vladdy second in first base voting. Addison Barger's third, third base voting. That's the fan vote, of course. Alejandro Kirk's second to Cal Raleigh, but it's like he's got about, I think he's got like 200 or 300,000. Raleigh's got like 1.3 million.
So, that's fair.
Anyhow, we'll talk about that a little later on. The Jays have today off after getting swept in three games by the Philadelphia Phillies. They scored 22-6 in the process. The Phillies winning 11-4 yesterday against Jose Berríos to put a capper on that three-game sweep. Jays are, as a result, 38-33 going into the series against the Diamondbacks tomorrow. Ben Shulman had the call of the series on Sportsnet over the weekend. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Ben, thanks so much for doing this today. What was your key takeaway from that three-game sweep? Like, give me the good. Let's make it a little positive. Was there any positives from that series you saw?
Sure. Thanks for having me on, guys. You know, I think Will Robertson getting his debut, coming up with a hit. I know there were two strikeouts and a double play in between, but I thought he handled himself pretty well. So I was generally impressed with what he did in one game. I thought Alan Roden had a sensational last game of the series. I know it gets a little lost in the mix of a blowout loss, but not only the catch, which is, I think, truly one of the great catches I've probably ever seen live, and probably a higher degree of difficulty than some diving catches and sliding catches you'll see. And then he had a good day at the plate, so I thought that was good. I don't know if there are a ton of other positives from that series. I think you can look at some from the trip, but obviously, you know, the Phillies for the most part dominated that series overall and really deserved to sweep that series from what we saw on the field.
Is there any positives that Bowden can take away to build off of going into his next start?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you look at that first 3 2/3. I know it goes really wrong after that. I do think there was a lot that I thought went well in those first 3 2/3 in terms of where he was getting pitches to. I think, you know, Caleb talked about it on the broadcast. The hitters were telling him with some of their swings that the stuff was playing pretty well. You know, there were a couple warning track fly balls, especially the first inning. I thought was maybe a little bit scarier of an inning than a 1-2-3 might say, but I really thought the second and the third looked good for him. And even until things really went wrong in the fourth, I thought that he had looked good through the first two batters. So I think you can look at those and take away what he did well from before the five straight batters reaching in a row. But at the same time, you know, I'm sure he is not, and everyone else on the outside is not ignoring the fact that it really did come apart a little bit in that fourth inning. And, you know, you can look at how many innings the bullpen had to cover and think that maybe if they had to use a couple fewer guys, there's a chance that they might have won that baseball game. So I think there are positives. I think there are things to build upon if he's, you know, getting ready for that next start against, I think, the Chicago White Sox is his next turn. The short answer is yes.
Do you think Vladdy's close offensively?
Yes, I think so. You know, I kind of think he's always a little bit close, but I think we put up a graphic about it. The swing decisions have not been a problem really for him. There was one swing decision I thought in that series that was a little bit questionable, but overall, you know, you look at the rate that he's walking versus striking out and some of the pitches he is and isn't going after. I think that when to swing and when not to swing is fine. I think what you're looking at now, and Caleb mentioned it, so I'll just kind of parrot him because he knows a lot more about hitting than I do, is maybe you just need to see him take some shots, you know? And I think that was something we saw with Addison Barger, two very different players, but Barger, when he first came up, was kind of getting comfortable, and then all of a sudden he hit all those home runs in about a week and a half because he really, you know, decided that once or twice here, I'm going to go up and take some big shots. And we've seen that from George Springer, too. Let me try and get out in front of a fastball and pull it over the wall, pull it high in the air, at least come up with a double, and you know, really create some damage. So I think that a change like that can come in one game. It can come in one plate appearance all of a sudden where you start feeling good and you say, hey, I think this guy's about to throw me a heater on the inner half and I'm just going to jump it and see if I can hit it over the wall. So I do think he's close. You know, at the same time, I understand people's frustration that, you know, we're fairly deep into the season at this point. The Blue Jays are over the 70-game mark and it still doesn't feel quite like he's had a rhythm, even if the overall offensive numbers are pretty solid, which I think they are.
Ben, how does John Schneider and Pete Walker navigate their way around Chad Green and Eric Swanson? Because clearly, you know, Nick Sandlin comes back. That might answer part of the question. But clearly right now, neither of them are very good. I mean, to be blunt.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit of a challenge right now. I think the Blue Jays have that when, you know, Jimmy went down and when Sandlin went down even before that, for a while it seemed like, hey, you know, they've got these guys and they've really covered that up and everyone's kind of pulling their weight. And I think you're starting to feel that a little bit in terms of putting guys in leverage spots now that maybe they weren't planning on, especially guys that might be coming off, you know, injuries or coming off other things. You know, I think ideally, you know, Chad Green has, you know, a week where he gives up a run or two. They'd love to put him in a lower leverage spot, get some confidence back and get rolling again, but they just can't afford to do that right now with the guys that they have on hand. And we've seen, you know, little blips here and there from some of the lefties in the Blue Jays bullpen. And I think still on the whole, both of them have pitched well. And I think Yariel has pitched well, but we saw just a small blip from him in St. Louis that the Blue Jays bats ended up coming back from. And so when all of a sudden, you know, some of these guys aren't way overperforming your projections anymore, now you're throwing, you know, Chad maybe into leverage again when he's still working on something right now or just trying to get back into rhythm. So it's a tough thing to navigate. I do think that the best way to do it is how the Blue Jays were winning a lot, score a lot of runs. And if you score a lot of runs, you get people into situations that are more comfortable. And whether they're tinkering things or trying out things or just looking for confidence, you know, I think that they get put in good positions for that. But there's no immediate band-aids. You know, the closest thing to that is that I think Nick Sandlin's got a good shot to return, you know, either on this homestand or immediately after this homestand. And I think that's a big boost to the Blue Jays, considering how many innings he can pitch and how many times he can appear based on the angle that he throws from and his durability typically over the years. So I do think that that'll help out a little bit, but it's not an easy situation. I think that for a while, some rookies and some other inexperienced guys in the pen were making it look as if those injuries didn't hurt. But I think we're starting to see now that Jimmy and Sandlin being out are pretty significant losses to this team that are difficult to cover.
Ben, is there any sense at all? Did you get any sense from anybody that there is anything other than, you know, green flags around Max Scherzer right now, understanding he's got to make that rehab start?
No red flags to speak of, at least, you know, no one said anything about thumbs or any sort of nerve issues. You know, they did after his start, they said he was dealing with fatigue at one point, but then they said, no, it's just regular buildup fatigue, not your injured or anything fatigue. It's just like, hey, this is essentially a new spring training for him. So no, I don't think so. I think as for right now, it's full steam ahead. And, you know, I think a lot of people have adopted the mindset that, you know, don't get too high until you see it on the mound. A lot of people outside of the Blue Jays, I mean. And I think, you know, that's probably a pretty healthy way to go about it. But it seems right now that the buildup has gone smoothly. He crossed that, you know, 50-pitch threshold that people talk about in his first rehab start. And everything seemed to check out fine. So it's just kind of all eyes on the next one and thinking that potentially the next one could be the last one if it goes well.
What happens to Lauer when Max comes back, you think?
I think Lauer sticks around. You know, does he start all the time? That's, you know, a bigger question for sure. But I think Lauer sticks around in some sort of role, whether they use him as kind of a Yarbrough-ish long man out of the pen, use you in a couple different spots. And, hey, if we need a lefty and our lefties are down, maybe we throw you in that spot. I think that's a possibility. But I just think Eric Lauer has pitched too well, probably, to be in danger of losing a spot on the roster right now. It's just about ironing out, is he more of a reliever or is he more of a long man, or is he kind of that in-between that the Blue Jays used Yarbrough in the second half last year?
Ben, really good of you to join us. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it. I know an off day after a good weekend's work is valuable. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, always a pleasure to come on with you guys. Have a great rest of the show.
Thank you.
See you. Ben Shulman, who had to call the Philly series along with Caleb Joseph. And again, the Jays will open their 3-game series against the Diamondbacks tomorrow. Question for you, Kevin. Mm. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. Do you think we are getting to the point where John Schneider has to break Bo and Vladdy up?
Yes, absolutely. I think when Dalton gets back, you stick Dalton between those two guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're seeing Vladdy whenever Bo swings at everything like he did in the 3-game series. The at-bats, I mean, yeah, I'm not as comfortable as Ben is when it comes to Vladdy and the timing. I mean, there's 70 games in. The talent that he has, if he was going to do it, he'd have done it already, wouldn't he? I mean, there's 70 games in. That was the point I was making on my little rant to start the show. Absolutely. I just think mixing them up, giving Vladdy a different look, just timing of when he's putting his batting gloves on. I mean, he's been comfortable having success in the 3-hole. Absolutely. I mean, it's for me anyway, it's really, really, really important to get him hot somehow. And if he ain't going to change anything mechanically, maybe just moving him down a spot in the lineup would do something different. I don't know what that different would be, but it might be something. And this is just me. If they don't get him going, it's going to be real tough. It's going to be just like you've noticed, against really good pitching, it's hard for the bottom lineup to do things. You need your heavy lifters to be doing things. And if Vladdy's just doing that thing that Vladdy's been doing, I just don't know how they can take off. Really add separation and be one of the teams that everybody can count on to solidify their spot.
And you know what kind of scared me about this weekend too is you close your eyes a little bit. And that is the type of pitching you're going to face in the postseason.
I'm not sure about that. That's really high end. Adding and subtracting and different arm angles and velocity from lefties. Yeah,
but you're going to get everybody's three best. Like you're not there. People aren't going to be playing games and moving guys around.
I mean,
around.
You could say Wheeler's top three in the sport. So I mean, those don't grow on trees. I get your point. I mean, I don't think that rotation. I think that rotation's far and few between. There's not many like it. But I think to your point and just the swing decisions that everybody wants to yell and scream about. See, I don't agree with what Ben said either about the, you know, he's swinging. Yeah, he may not be chasing balls, but is he chasing things that he can slug on? He don't like the ball in. I mean, you've said this forever. The other team will tell you what they think of you. They basically was saying, Vladdy, I'm throwing you a heater in. Like, that's basically what they did for 3 days, and two of them were left-handed. I think that's sort of where he's at, where, you know, you're getting Calebs of the world having conversations of him selling out. And I never thought that. I mean, he's 26. Why are you going to sell out for? I mean, if I don't like it in there, don't swing at it. Force him in the middle of the zone. It's that kind of thing. You should be able to do it other than other guys below you. Should be easier for you to do it. You should be more prepared for it. That for me, is where the plan B. I just don't understand that. The caliber of that guy offensively, and he don't have a plan B to go to. It's just really mind-boggling to me. I mean, there's 72 hitting coaches over there. 72 of them.
Has he had a plan B before that you've noticed?
No, I just don't think he's really had to have one.
Okay.
This is really – and FP said about the when you first sign your deal, the pressure you put on yourself. Every time I've said that, you've rolled your eyes.
Yeah, because I
– FP said it. You didn't roll your eyes. What's the difference?
Because I was thinking – I wasn't thinking of Vladdy in particular. Vladdy's always had – he's always been the guy. He's always had the pressure.
Has he ever signed for half a billion dollars?
Other than the year where they had Semien and everybody here.
Oh, it's a minor league part.
He's always been the highest paid player in the team.
That's different. What? Highest paid player is different than a half a billion.
Right.
Just rolls right
Whatever.
Off your tongue. I'm just saying, does it look different to you? Does his bat look different? Does he look slower? Does he look like he can't compete? There's little of that. No? Why is that?
I don't think he doesn't look like he can. Saying he can't compete is a little strong. I don't think that's the case. I do tend to.
Okay, he's not top. I hate to bring this up, but you forced me into it. He's not top 60 in total bases.
Yeah.
There's 70 games in. Jeff?
I, I, I'm not taking him that he can't compete.
I just hold him to a higher standard than you. And I don't think he's a tough out. And I think the three dudes that he faced in Philly showed him that.
I do think.
That's all I said about the plan B.
I do think he needs to hit third in the lineup. I think that makes a big difference. Again, the numbers are there. And
I'm at the point, why not?
Well,
it's more about getting him on than everybody else.
He'd been there anyhow.
Yeah.
Third.
I don't care where Bo hits. Bo's going to do whatever Bo does, right? He's going to swing at things. Why should Vladdy have to worry about what Bo's swinging at? And there's a little lad. You can tell. Like, he just don't know when he chases the ball in off the plate and grounds out to the pitcher. Now, what's Vladdy do? Do I take it? Do I swing at it? He just don't have a true plan when it comes to how aggressive he should be because of the guy in front of him. I don't think that's Vladdy's fault. I think you should separate him. That's just me.
The flaw in what John Schneider has done here has been the fact that the logic that my three best hitters should get the extra at bat doesn't work when one of your best hitters isn't acting like one of your best hitters. That's the issue I have with I get at the start of the year. I get why they did it at the start of the year. I completely understand it. Not the case anymore. Not the case anymore.
I think he has to be your best hitter. He can't be one of your best hitters. He has to be your best hitter.
He's not right now, so therefore, yeah. So I, you know,
moving him down. Let me ask you a question. Will he be more on time if you move him to the three hole?
I don't know.
That's the answer. You have to figure out what the answer has
to be.
Is it yes? If it's not yes, then you don't move him.
Will it make a difference having seen an extra 5 or 6 pitches before he comes to the plate? Maybe. I don't know, but it's worth a try. Nothing else has worked. And, you know, if he hasn't gone on one of those rolls, well, then do something to change it up.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I just don't know.
I don't know, Kevin. I don't know. Probably not. Is he going to wake up? Oh, I'm in third now. I'm going to be on time. No.
Well, it's basically what you're saying.
But will he be, will it feel different to him? Maybe. Again, will he have seen more pitches when he comes up? I don't know. The point is, try it.
John's going to say to you, because you could ask, one of us will ask John on Friday, but what John's going to say is, what's your other option? Who is it?
I don't care. Barger.
Yes, you do. That's what you do care.
Barger. Varsho. I don't care. I don't care. Barger.
You do.
Barger, Varsho, Jimenez. I just don't care. At this point, I want Vladdy hitting third.
Hmm.
I really do. Other than that, you know, make it work. They're all major leaguers. Make it work. It's not like if you're hitting him third, he's still going to get that extra at bat. But I just think you give him a chance to be more comfortable hitting third. And again, the numbers I think would suggest that his numbers hitting third are better, are they not?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well then, can't hurt. You think it's going to make him a worse hitter? Is it going to make him slower in the number three spot than in the number two spot? Is he going to be less on time in the number three spot than the number two spot? Doubt it.
Yeah, I just like to see him make a little mechanical change. So
yeah, but he hasn't done it so far.
I know that.
So what does that tell you?
I don't know what that tells me, Jeff. It's I think you have a hitter who's very stubborn and thinks that he has more talent than anybody on planet Earth, which he might. But right now he's getting beat.
Yeah.
With fastballs. They're not afraid to throw him velocity. It's been almost 70 games of that. That's the only thing. And moving him to the three hole, would that help? I don't know. I think the mechanical tweak would help more than putting him in the three hole. But I don't think he's buying into the mechanical tweak. He ain't got a two-strike approach, and nor should he have one. I just think, you know, again, it's going to be real tough. They've been asking a lot, and they've been real lucky that dudes that nobody thought that would be hot and be good this year, Kirky, Springers, Bargers of the world, are good.
Yeah.
And that's sort of taking a little bit of pressure off of you. I guess you could throw Bo in there and some of Vladdy. But I just, for me anyway, you want to go from being meaningful games in September to being a playoff team? Get Vladdy hot somehow. Do that, then you're probably going to be a playoff team. If you don't,
would it have
it's gonna be hard.
Would it surprise you if the Jays actually did make a call on Devers? Spoke to Boston.
No, they wouldn't be doing their job if they didn't.
Yeah,
you can play a big fella. You play wherever you want to play. You want to pitch? Go for it.
Well, there is an opening.
How about
in the
rotation? How about that two-hole hitter? Now you're cooking with gravy, boy.
We've been giving you the chance to win. I knew you were going to come up with that at some point. We've been giving you a chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question. Text it to 590-590. Our last question and answer was, he's the three-time All-Star who played 18 seasons for six major league teams. He enjoyed two separate stints in Toronto and played for Arizona in between his time with the Blue Jays. He finished his career with the Phillies and is currently a broadcaster. The answer is Dan Plesac.
Good one.
Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and White Sox at the Rogers Center on June 20th. He's a first-round pick who made his MLB debut with the Blue Jays, but he was not drafted by Toronto. He has worn both types of socks in the majors as he has played in Chicago and Boston. He currently still plays in Chicago, just not for the White Sox anymore. Again, he's a first-round pick who made his MLB debut with the Blue Jays, but he was not drafted by Toronto. He has worn both types of socks in the majors as he has played in Chicago and Boston. He currently still plays in Chicago, just not for the White Sox anymore. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win tickets to see the Jays and White Sox at the Rogers Center on June 20th. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Standard message and data rates may apply. You know who it is, don't you?
Yeah.
And you're really nervous right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you know that I've got about 5,000 different puns rolling through my head.
Mm.
None of which will see the light of day.
Good boy.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break because there's one that I really want to say, but I won't. We'll take a break when we come back. John Morosi joins us. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hell was that?
Worm. Hey.
Those of you who are on the radio right now are saying, what the hell was Blair talking about? What the hell? The Barker was doing some odd things with his arms. I found, frankly, a little disconcerting.
You did? What's in that cup?
Just water.
Well,
hey, what?
It's a fair question. Coffee, water? What is it?
It's water. You saw me go out to get it.
I didn't see anything.
You know, people are going to start.
Are they?
Yeah. No, it's water. What else would it be?
Coffee.
I'm not getting coffee out of that machine.
It's good, actually.
Wins a lot. What?
Yeah, I've had it a couple of times when I'm too cheap to go out and buy something else.
No.
Yeah. No. And my buddy won't get off his wallet. You know my buddy?
I know nobody who considers themselves your buddy.
Oh, that's not true.
The Jays have tonight off before opening. It's a six-game homestand,
the biggest
right?
series of the season.
Oh, stop it. They've got the Diamondbacks, and then they got the White Sox.
Yeah.
So that should set up
five
nicely.
And one. They fire everybody if they don't. Yeah.
Well, 5-1 is...
5-1.
I expect them to go 5-1.
You do?
Well, they should sweep the White Sox. I mean,
the Diamondbacks rake, dude.
We go out in that room there and put a team together. And
they rake. The Diamondbacks, they better score runs.
Well, they'll take two or three from the Diamondbacks and sweep the White Sox.
Who are you? You've changed.
I haven't changed.
You have.
I haven't changed.
Well, they better pitch better, and the dudes that matter better hit better.
Yeah,
they
do
those two things.
Jose Barrios isn't going to have another start like he had in the series.
No.
And Kevin Gausman, that four-run second inning, was just kind of... I was surprised you missed an opportunity to rip in an umpire because you could have taken Chad Whitson out the.
No, I actually agreed with Chad. You got to earn your calls sometimes. It's the big leagues. You're facing possibly the World Series champion.
Maybe you're Kevin.
Better make good pitches.
You're not some 22-year-old rookie.
Stop whining. They're balls.
Yeah, they were borderline. Could have had a couple of them. Could have been strikes. They were borderline. Anyhow.
That box says you're wrong, Jeff.
Well, the box is stupid.
What's your eagle eye? You knew it was on the corner without the box. Yeah,
box
I bet.
Dumb.
While you were puffing on your cigar on the dock. Yeah,
I was not,
I know, right. Holding the phone up, watching the game on the phone.
No, yeah. If you remember, it was a Friday
You're such
night.
A liar.
It was a Friday night.
It was one of them.
It was a Friday night, and I was in the studio
you
watching
were?
It. Yeah.
Mm.
Anyhow.
I hear you.
Let's bring in John Morosi of the MLB Network.
Look at him.
Look at him.
He's sharp looking.
You are sharp. How you doing, Mr. Morosi?
Hey, buddy.
Doing great. Happy Father's Day to you both, belatedly. We
you
had a
too?
Pretty newsy Father's Day, I would say, in
wow.
the baseball world yesterday.
Dude, I was going to say it was the mother of all Father's Days in some ways. So is it true now that Rob Manfred's just going to cancel the trade deadline? Because nothing's going to happen at the trade deadline that beats this deal, that beats the Devers deal, is it?
Oh, Jeff, on the contrary, I'm a big believer that when a lot of big moves happen early, now this is really early, that it could portend even a more active deadline than usual. But let's make this statement. This was not really connected to the trade deadline itself or any particular date on the calendar. This was a matter of the Boston Red Sox reaching a point at which they felt as though they could not repair the relationship with Rafael Devers, and this was their best opportunity to move him while achieving two things, bringing back at least some major league talent, which they did. It wasn't elite, but it was at least major league talent, and they found a team to take the entire contract back in terms of paying it all, and that's what they did. We can discuss the virtue of that, but that appears to me to be precisely what the Red Sox were trying to do.
This is different than the Betts deal, isn't it? Because people automatically, you know, on social media, at least, they were talking about the Luka Doncic deal, Mookie Betts, trying to draw a comparison.
Nomar, there was some Nomar comparison.
Nomar comparison. This is different certainly different than Betts, isn't it?
Very much so, because the situation with Mookie was that he was coming towards the end of his contract. He was about to become a free agent. The Red Sox knew they couldn't extend him. They were going to lose him. In the case of Devers, he was signed into the next decade, okay? He's the face of the franchise. And so from the Red Sox perspective, they had to have concluded that the internal dynamics had deteriorated to the point that losing him was in some way better than keeping him. I have a hard time seeing that as being a reasonable take here in terms of what they actually were able to achieve. And you just wonder, guys, there had to be a better way to handle this than to trade away someone who is objectively one of the 10 best players in baseball in terms of just a pure hitter. Mm-hmm. And even this, let's compare him to Vladdy. Contract for contract, who's the better deal? Vladdy, what he's making, or Devers of what he's making?
Devers.
Not even a comparison.
Yeah.
It's Rafael Devers.
Yeah. Yeah.
By a mile.
Yeah.
By a mile. And the Red Sox had that contract and had that player and could not figure it out. Now, the thing that stands out to me right now that is really important to say in all of this is this all started when Alex Bregman signed with the Red Sox. It was, I think, a very good contract, good relationship in a lot of ways where the Bregman deal made sense for Boston, except for this one really relevant point that is especially important today. Alex Bregman has an opt-out in his contract mm-hmm. after this year. This year. So all of this might have happened for someone precipitated by the arrival of someone who is here for 7 months.
Right.
And that to me is the part of managing this situation that I just can't figure out. If you had signed Alex Bregman to a 10-year contract and you wanted to rename it Bregman Park, fine. But that's a one-year situation that you now have changed the entire dynamic of your team over.
Are they a playoff team in your mind right now today? Could they be?
I mean, no,
without Devers?
No. No, they're not, in my opinion. However, this is the American League in 2025.
Right.
And this is, as we like to call it, the land of opportunity if you're 500. And so you look around, there are going to be some teams that make the postseason this year in the American League. And when you look at their lineup and look at their pitchers in the first round, you'll 10 years from now, you'll say, that was a playoff team? There's a lot of opportunity right now in the American League. So there's an asterisk there, which is, in a normal year, in a normal situation, they would not be a playoff team. We have seen plenty of teams. By the way, the Milwaukee Brewers last year made the playoffs as a division winner after trading Corbin Burns, who was their best pitcher. So you can do it. And Alex Cora is the type of manager who probably can, because he almost thrives on situations where you're a bit of an underdog, a little bit of a different mentality, how you have to manage the team. Maybe he finds a way to get a lot out of Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks. But it's very difficult to sell to a fan base like Red Sox Nation and all of New England that they're somehow a better team when they woke up on June 16th than they did when they woke up on June 15th. And I don't see that as being something they could credibly sell to the fan base there.
Yeah, I also wonder, John, when I look at Liverpool signing Florian Wirtz to a $100 million, or actually paying a $100 million transfer fee.
Yeah.
And then on top of that will be his weekly salary for a young German soccer player. I wonder how that will go over in Red Sox Nation as well. Because look, that people do wonder whether or not John Henry his attention's been maybe a little too divided between Liverpool or between the other holdings, other Fenway Sports Group holdings, and the Red Sox.
Penguins included, obviously. They just had a coaching change, of course. So here's my take on that. Back in 2004, John Henry was a new owner. Theo was there. Francona was there. They made the Nomar trade. A lot of things were happening at that time. Of course, they win the World Series. Ending the curse in Boston was, from a sports standpoint, the complete and total focus of John Henry, Tom Werner, and then the late Larry Lucchino at that point in time. That was their entire sports universe, was this team and that quest. And then they checked that box. And, of course, then later on, other holdings came along, Liverpool, the Penguins, and different interests from a marketing standpoint. The portfolio is very diverse now. And in general, I do think it's a good thing that you're seeing ideas about management and effective ways of building organizations shared with different sports. I think in general that's a good thing. But if the simple question, as you're asking it, is are they as completely focused on winning the World Series with the Boston Red Sox every year as they once were 2 decades ago? I think objectively the answer is no. There are more things going on, and it in some ways, Jeff, it surprises me that the Red Sox seem to be, again, just based on the data point you mentioned just now for Liverpool, that the Red Sox seem to be a little bit lower on the pecking order, if you will, because this is still the sport where the owner can make a massive difference.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the Penguins, you can spend to the cap or close to the cap, but you're all spending about the same in the NHL. Again, there's a variance, no question, but it's a small variance. In baseball, there is a massive variance between the Mets, Dodgers, and the Pirates and Marlins. Right. And so this is where you can do the most. Your marginal dollar does more in baseball than it does in hockey because there's a greater spread. And it seems as though, for whatever reason, baseball has dropped down a little bit in terms of the hierarchy. Now, I'll make this one last point as I send it back to you. If you go out there and sign Kyle Tucker this winter, maybe that changes the conversation. And maybe they'll do that. Maybe they will do that. But this is definitely a moment where the fan base of the Boston Red Sox says, you better show me. Or Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer, it better be as good as you tell me they are. Because if they're not, it's going to be a long time before Fenway feels like it did for a really long time.
The Giants have had an awful time trying to land free agent hitters. Now they did get Willy Adames, but you know, we talked about Aaron Judge and other guys they've gone after. How big of a coup is this for Buster Posey as club president?
I love it. I think it's a great move for Buster. You know, in a simple sense, when you make a trade like this and you get the best player, you win the trade. That's what I'm seeing right here, especially when he's under contract for as long as Rafael Devers is. You're exactly right, Jeff. They've been looking for a player like Devers for a long time, whether it was Judge, whether it was there were whispers even about Otani pursuing him at one point in time, Soto. They've been looking for a middle-of-the-order Bonzian type presence for a really long time. I mean, on this day, Devers is the best slugger they have had since Pablo Sandoval. And Sandoval was inconsistent. There were times when he was brilliant, brilliant. But Devers will be more consistent, I believe, than Sandoval ever was. And really, you're talking about a generational type of a player. And if you can't always win the bids in free agency, you got to go to the trade market. And you've got to be aggressive. And so the Giants are doing two things now that I love to see. As just someone who follows the game and wants teams to be healthy financially and competitive, the Giants are doing two things here that not every team will do now. Number one, they're spending well more than nine figures to bring in a superstar. Not everybody does that. And number two, they're trading young players, which not every team will do.
Okay.
And so these are things that are putting yourself out there. There are certain GMs and owners that will do this. The Mets are doing this. The Dodgers do it. The Phillies are doing it. Notice I'm mentioning a whole lot of National League teams right now.
Yeah.
Either a super aggressive president of baseball operations like Dave Dombrowski with, again, John Middleton, someone who will bless that level of spending. And now we're seeing the Giants rejoin that level. Under the late Peter Seidler, the Padres were that way too. A.J. Preller also very imaginative, very aggressive. Go for it. If not all the time, at least some of the time. That's what fans should be able to ask of their teams. The Jays have checked that box. With the Vladdy extension, other moves they've made, they have been going for it. But these types of moves are done by a minority of teams right now. Probably fewer than a third of the teams in baseball are capable of walking the journey of a trade like this. Mm-hmm. And I give the Giants immense credit. We talk a lot about what is the new zeitgeist, the prevailing wisdom of baseball. Going for it is the new inefficiency, if you will. It's becoming groupthink too. Oh, no, can't give them our prospects now. They're too valuable. It's worth X number of war. It's worth X number of wins for X number of years. Can't do that. No, fly the flag by winning and make a trade like what you saw the Royals make 10 years ago when they traded away prospects to get Cueto and Zobrist. Mm-hmm. They won the World Series. Doesn't work that way every year, but I love it when teams like the Giants make a move like this.
JP, any chance he plays first?
Oh, yeah. I do think so, 100%. I think that his refusal to play first base in Boston, Kevin, was entirely contingent on the relationship with Craig Breslow, the GM, the president of baseball operations, and the way that things have been handled in the offseason. You can see as a player, if you're a proud player, and Devers is a proud player, that if you are getting feedback that, oh, your spot is safe, you're our third baseman, then all of a sudden you're not. And you've got someone that came in on top of you from a standpoint of the contract and the place, you're a little bit hurt. And then you're maybe not quite as, I'm not excusing it, but this is, I think, the way that he was processing things. New place, new beginning. You've got Buster Posey, future Hall of Fame player, sitting down next to you saying, listen, Rafi, it makes our team better. We've got Matt Chapman over at third base. We all know how great Matt is over at third. I think for me that you're going to see him be willing to at least be a first base DH combo. Whatever that looks like, we'll see. But I would imagine that in the next couple of weeks, you'll see him playing first base. And, guys, wouldn't it be amazing? Just paint this picture. Friday, in San Francisco, the Red Sox in town. Here comes Rafael Devers jogging out. And by the way, the first base dugout at that ballpark is the visiting dugout. It's the visiting dugout in San Francisco.
It's tremendous.
I want to see that. Tune in, baby, Friday
it's
night.
Tremendous.
Yeah, me too. JP, I got to flip it over to the Jays. Jays just got swept by the Phillies. Does that change the way you think about the Jays?
No. I think the Jays are still an above average, even if it's slightly above average, but they're an above average team in a very average league right now. So when you run up against a team like the Phillies, who I just mentioned in the last answer, are a team that goes for it. They've got some serious superstars. The Phillies sweeping the Jays does not surprise me. Now, if the Jays were swept in back-to-back series from the Marlins and the White Sox, I'd probably give you a different answer. But this is a predictable result for me that the Phillies would at the very least win the series and potentially sweep it. I think the Jays still need to get a little bit more on. They're a little bit short of being a team that I think can win a postseason series. They could probably get there the way they're playing right now, more or less. But if you're actually going to try to win a series and make it further than you did when you lost to the Twins a couple years ago, you need more. You need probably one more bat, although I love the way that Barger has matured. And I think pitching is still the big question. Do you have enough to carry you through? So I think that they're an imperfect team that is firmly in the playoff conversation of a very mediocre league.
I like that answer. A good one.
Shohei Ohtani will pitch tonight as an opener. Are you surprised, even as an opener, are you surprised that the Dodgers are doing this as soon as they're doing it?
A little bit, Jeff,
early as they're doing it.
Right. So I was out there a couple weeks ago in L.A., and the vibe that I got was that he was going to start close to the All-Star break. This is a little earlier than I thought it was going to be, even based on what my information was about a week or so ago. So what this tells me is, and let's be clear on this, he's not going to go six innings today. He's probably going to go one, maybe two. He's an opener. It's a big deal. It's going to be a massive story. He's an opener. Let's manage the expectations here. And I think that, as Dave Roberts said it last night, Shohei's basically reached the end of what you could call the simulated scenarios. There is nothing more for him to prove. Look at him on the mound. He can get outs in a major league game tonight. That's going to happen. He's a major league. He looks like he's having a good time, feeling good. He's a major league starting pitcher, feeling good about himself. And this is a Dodger team that needs a lift, to be honest with you. Roky Sasaki, who knows if he's going to be back on the mound pitching before the season is over. They've had injuries and sort of a questioning situation with Glasnow and Snell. They need him. And this is the way that you build him up to being able to get to a spot where he's able to pitch on a more consistent basis every sixth day, maybe in the second half. And I'll say this with certainty, and this is something that Dodger officials were basically promising me when I was talking to him last week. They're not going to have him pitch unless and until they know that as they map things out, that he is within his range of workload to be able to pitch for them without limitations at the end of October.
Right.
So they're, you know, somewhat optimistically saying, okay, we think there's a chance we're in the World Series again. So if you want him to be able to throw six innings on Halloween, backdate it all the way to June 16th. And I think they've gotten to this point. He's probably still not going to throw 100 innings this season. Maybe it's going to be right around there, but they're going to be really careful. And this is the start of a really careful, but understanding that you look at his body language. I'm big on reading body language. The body language of that sim game to me, Kevin and Jeff said, he's ready to face hitters. He's there. And tonight begins the process of finding out what it looks like under the bright light. Should be a lot of fun.
Yep. Yeah, it should be. Just, you know, given the Dodgers history.
Don't say it.
Given the Dodgers history with pitching, I'm going to go down as a skeptic. I think this is, anyhow, I think he should be a position player. That's just me. But it's hard to tell.
He played right field once upon a time. He did.
That's true. John, we're going to let you run. Thanks for doing this, my friend.
Thanks,
be well.
Buddy.
Really enjoyed it. Have a great week, gentlemen. Thanks
you
so much.
You too. See you.
Thank you. John Morosi of the MLB Network. And, yes, you can see Shohei Ohtani's start tonight on Sportsnet Plus. sad news to pass on. The Toronto Blue Jays have just announced that longtime team doctor and former Major League Baseball player Dr. Ron Taylor passed away today at the age of 87. And I'm just reading Newsweek as an article on it. Dr. Taylor, just a wonderful man, had many, many conversations with him at spring training or just in the dugout around the team. But he was also a hell of a pitcher. He won a World Series with the Cardinals in 64. He was part of the Miracle Mets team in 1969. He had a 9-4 record, a 2.72 ERA, made two scoreless appearances against the Orioles. And that was that big Orioles team. And in game two, he retired Brooks Robinson, the only batter he faced, to end the game with two runners on base and two outs in game two of that World Series. He was a much beloved member of those Mets teams. Anytime there was an old timers game at Shea Stadium or any ceremony, he was always welcomed back and always accorded a long ovation. And we want to pass on our condolences to his family, his many friends, and indeed, many patients. I know a couple of folks who had Dr. Taylor as a physician. Mm-hmm. And again, special man,
And again, our condolences to his family, his friends, to the Blue Jays organization, because he very much played an important part.
Huge part.
In the history of that team. And as I said, just a wonderful man, and always enjoyed our conversations. So the Jays have today off. Interesting, John Morosi's conversation about the Jays. It's funny. I going into that Philly series, I was all about getting more pitching. I'm still all about getting more pitching, but if Vladdy doesn't turn it on, if Santander comes back and doesn't look like the Santander we know. I mean, you've got to do something to address the offense, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of heavy lifting.
Oh, it's a great. I'm not pretending it's easy. It's a ton of heavy.
Realistically,
lifting.
You need another starter, maybe a number three, an eighth inning guy, yeah. And you're asking for maybe a six hole hitter.
Yeah,
I mean that's a lot.
That's fair.
I mean, I mean, there's more about trying to get Vladdy, whatever's wrong with Vladdy.
I think you're right. You've got to get that fixed regardless of what you do at the deadline.
Well, absolutely. Are they making the playoffs without a hot Vladdy? I don't know how.
Right. Well,
how
would you know they? What? They're in the. Can I just say this? They're in the playoff spot right now without a hot
That's
Vladdy.
70 games in. Can they do that for another 90 games?
They might be able to in the American
good
League
luck.
This year.
Good luck. That puts a lot more pressure on an olding, you know, rotation to
I
just
know.
Continue to do things. And, you know, the heavy lifting the other teams in the American League are going to do at the break.
Well, they're
right?
going to
you know,
try.
They're going to do some heavy lifting too. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think you get everybody back healthy. Maybe you get Tony in there, you know, doing some stomping. Maybe that will help. Take a little pressure off Vladdy. Maybe moving Vladdy into the three hole. I mean, it won't hurt. Why not try that? Putting Varsho in the two hole. At least it'd give a opposing team a different look. Make it a little easier for Vladdy just to have a Vladdy at bat, which I think might take a little pressure off him. So, yeah, I think that's a ton. Boy, you are asking a lot from the front office.
I know I am, tell me that didn't cross your mind watching that series, though.
I don't know. I mean, we said this Friday, just try not to get swept. John, the manager, was trying to do everything he could do in game two, right? He was throwing his high leverage guys early in the game, keep it close to give somebody a chance. Vladdy came up big later in the game with the big double RBI, and then you had to throw a high leverage guy or a guy you shouldn't be throwing in high leverage just because. Right, you'd sort of used everybody else. You know, it was that element of surprise. Hadn't used him yet against that part of the lineup. Like, if he's in your bullpen, you got to throw him.
Oh, you can't.
Like, you know, you just can't all the time like massage around him. They're doing that enough with the rotation.
Yeah, you can't. You can kind of manage your way around maybe one questionable arm in the bullpen. It's awfully hard to manage your way around two when you got an older rotation and a guy in Bowden Francis who gives you 3 2/3. I mean, it's just really hard. It's hard to sort of say we're going to leave these two arms on the shelf right now. And Pete talked about this. It's great what Fluharty's doing. It's great what Brendan Little's doing. But at some point, you're going to start looking at their workload too.
I mean,
you've already seen Jimmy Garcia get hurt. Now you're looking at these two young guys. And at some point, you've got to say, okay, this has been great, but do we really want to keep Mason Fluharty
I know the player already has adjusting routines and what they're not doing. They're not doing as much off the field, so they're better on the field. I know they're already doing it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
it's a sign, Kevin.
Well, yeah, but they don't have a choice. Like win the games you're supposed to be winning, and when you got the lead, you're going to guys because other guys are not performing. And that goes with the lineup. Like, guys in the lineup that you are expecting to do things, quite frankly, ain't getting it done. Mm. And when they're not, and you got the lead, if you have to abuse dudes, you have to abuse dudes. And that's sort of where they're at. So, hopefully, they get everybody back healthy. Everything can line up. You start getting Vladdy. I think, for me, it's plan B. Will you ever see it? Probably not. He's too stubborn, thinks he's too good to do plan B. Me, I think the sooner you do it, the better off you'll be. But that's just me, what I know. I've been watching baseball for 16 years. But sooner or later, he's going to have to get hot and start stomping things. If he don't, can you really count on the Bargers and the Kirks and the, you know, the Straws and the, oh, boy, that's a lot. For 162?
As of now, they're in a playoff spot.
They are.
Without Vladdy doing much of Vladdy things. Anyhow.
We will have baseball for you tomorrow night. The Jays and the Diamondbacks will get you set for that series tomorrow. Enjoy your off day or your off night. Whatever. Enjoy it.